Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Columbo Chronicles, live today, just for you.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Columbo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Columbo, available at Amazon.com.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Hope you're having a great day. This is a great day. The sky's blue. There's clouds in the sky, and the birds are chirping. So we should all be happy for a beautiful day, hopefully in your area as well as ours. And just to let you know, we have a dynamic guest today, and her name is Pamela Kelly. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Pamela Kelly in just a moment, because she has an exciting project that we're going to be talking about, and you won't want to miss it, especially if you are a writer, an author, or someone who loves to go to plays like I do. And also, you are looking to build up your public speaking and need a coach. Pamela Kelly is the person to go to. And but I'm so excited because she is going to discuss her latest project, Becoming Shakespeare, Young Will. And so you will not want to miss this because it's different. And, you know, it takes your mind away from just what's happening around us and brings you into another world where you can learn and you can also be empowered and you can hear about something that's coming in the future that you won't want to miss and maybe want to even participate in. But before we get started, I wanted to let you know, because I'm a member of the ACLJ, that he has a major announcement, and he says that he's directly taking a monumental prayer case to the United States Supreme Court. You know, this is America. We have freedom of religion. It's really difficult for me to understand why we can't just implement freedom of religion. But the article says, or actually just a memo, angry atheists and anti-Christian extremists have long been abusing the federal court system, rushing the court, claiming to be offended by some public display of prayer or exercise of religious liberty. When a crime spree gripped the local community, a prayer vigil was organized and city officials, police, and chaplains attended the event. Individuals opposed to prayer sued, and a federal court ruled that the public prayer was unconstitutional. ACLJ is prepared to fight and file a certified petition to the Supreme Court, and not only is public prayer constitutional, anti-Christian radicals have no right to bring such lawsuits in the first place on U.S. soil that protects freedom of religion. So, you know, we have so many issues today going on in our world, like hungry children, for example, or open borders, et cetera, that the United States Constitution establishes these rights for all Americans. You don't have to participate, or you can participate, but the great beauty of America is that you have a choice, and that's what we're fighting for, actually, is a choice. We're fighting to have and maintain our free will and our free choice to our minds and bodies, because we can make our own decisions for our own selves, and the government is attempting to take these rights away and liberties and freedoms. And that's why we need to be aware and have knowledge of what is going on. So if you want to participate and you want to support these issues, you can. And if you don't, That's your free will and your free choice, and you don't have to. And you can oppose them as well. But that's the beauty of living in the United States of America. And I hope that everyone will support maintaining the established constitutional right to a free will and a free choice. And on that note, we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts. And that's always a favorite part of everyone's show, listening to the show. And we're going to introduce our wonderful author as well as public speaker and playwright when she's going to tell us about her wonderful new project in just a moment, right after this important.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles Live Podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, because we're about to welcome a very dynamic guest. Her name is Pamela Kelly. She's in communication. She is a public speaking coach, and I can't even speak now. It's not a good thing. So when Pamela Kelly began teaching public speaking for professionals at UCLA Extension 30 years ago, which is when I started my movement for justice, this launched her working with thousands of professionals in academic institutions, government agencies, corporations, U.S. and abroad, whether coaching one-on-one or developing group trainings in public speaking and presentation skills, vocal development, or in speaking English with clarity, Pamela instills a sense of trust, confidence, and play, while her students develop their mastery of communication skills and effectiveness. Pamela is the author of Speak with Passion, Speak with Power, a public speaking workbook, and easy-to-follow step-by-step guide with real-life case studies and original cartoons that transforms inexperience of fear of public speaking into energy and know-how and results. Well, she also was a Irwin Award winner for her book, Speak with Passion, Speak with Power, and that's how Pamela Kelly and I met, is because of Irwin Zucker, who recently passed, actually was the founder and CEO of the Book Publishers of Southern California for 46 years and brought so many people together that he is missed by all. And so we are lucky to have had Irwin with us for so long. And now, because of Irwin, I can introduce you to Pamela Kelly, so she can tell us about her latest project. So let's just get started and say hello to Pamela Kelly. Hi, Pamela Kelly. How are you doing today?
Hi, Rose. Oh, I'm doing great. I'm so inspired after listening to your opening conversation about our freedoms. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. That's my passion, is maintaining freedom in America, because that's what we're all about, so that Pamela Kelly and can write and teach and coach and travel and tell us about her new project. And Rose
Thank
can talk
you.
To Pamela Kelly and learn about it, so along with our audience. So, Pamela,
yes.
tell us,
yes.
what inspired you? I was kind of curious. Why would you be curious about becoming Shakespeare and young Will with music and song and his young life?
Yes, thank you for that question, Rose. Well, you know, my work as a teacher and in public speaking and in all of my communications courses is really about drawing out the best of people, seeing their power, seeing their extraordinary, seeing their charisma and drawing it out, creating a free space, speaking of freedom, creating freedom and safety for them to unfold and express their power, own their power. So after many years of teaching and developing courses, workshops, traveling around the world, it just sort of became the next step for me to start looking at someone I've been a huge fan of since I was a little girl, William Shakespeare. I was an actress and I got to play a lot of Shakespearean roles. Then I taught voice and speech to actors and I used a lot of Shakespearean monologues in my teaching. And so what happened was I just started thinking about the man, Shakespeare. And how did he do what he did? How did he become who he became? The genius, the immortal. And so that obsession, it became a sort of obsession that my mind was dwelling on, led me to start reading and researching. And after a few years, I thought, why don't I just write down the events that happened in his life, the facts, the historical events that are recorded, as well as the persistent rumors, such as that he was arrested at the age of 21 for deer poaching. That has been a persistent rumor. So I did. That's what I did, and that's how I started. I ended up writing the script, Becoming Shakespeare, Young Will, that tells the story of how the little boy, it opens when he's 5 years old, how he, through his character, through his circumstances and his choices, unfolds to be in a place where he will eventually go to London with the skill sets and the soul of the bard. How did that happen? So that was the question that I had asked myself, and that's the story of my story.
Isn't that something? Because that goes to show how just a thought can just turn into more thoughts and then cause you to react to something and create something. And so that really proves we are our thoughts. And as long as we go forward with positive thoughts, not the negative ones,
yeah.
but the positive thoughts. And so can you share a little bit about his young life? What was he like?
Yes, yes, just exactly what you said. That was beautiful about going, that our thoughts sort of lead us and lead our choices. And so let me just, a little backstory, Rose. I did not write this with the intention of having music and songs, but after I saw La La Land, I was so swept away by the music, I thought, I must have music and songs. So I went back to my script. I started reading it, looking for those moments that just would leap out, calling for music and songs. And the first one happens pretty early on. It's John Shakespeare, Will's dad. But I want to skip to Will's song, because it relates to what you were saying about his thoughts. And in the song, it's called I Am I. Will sings it when he's 15. His father has been on a downward spiral for a few years and has gotten more and more in debt. He stopped paying his guild dues. He's like accumulating all of these fines for not going to church. So there, his thoughts are leading him down the rabbit hole here. And Will feels devastated that he's not going to be able to stay in school, because in school he enjoys, for instance, learning the sword play and musical instruments and being in the Roman comedies and the applause and the laughter of his classmates and the ad-libbing and the dirty jokes that he ad-libs. He enjoys all of that, and it feeds his soul, his joy. But now he has to drop out of school to help his father with the glove-making business. And at first he's devastated, and he starts singing, "How can I do what I must do?" But in the course of this song, when he's looking at how can he save his family from poverty and penury, suddenly the sun breaks through the trees, pierces his eyes, and he realizes he's not alone. He is surrounded by the abundance of nature, and that reminds him of his own still young, powerful nature. And so the song, it's almost 5 minutes long, is his journey, and it's his awakening from being a victim to really taking the reins of his life into his own hands. He realizes that he can use the energy of the sun to save his family from poverty. He can use the example of the oak tree to be constant and steadfast, and also to reach for the stars. And then a breeze turns the pages of his books, which are lying under the oak tree, and he realizes, you know, by day I can work and save my family, but by night I can read, I can write my poetry, and reach for the stars. So he discovers in this song, I am I have a mind and a heart, I can have it all. So that's the response you just generated from what you said, Rose.
That's amazing.
And this is one of three songs. We have
that's
three
amazing.
Songs that are completed.
Oh, great. So you're going to have music and song. And so what about the musicians? You'll have to hire musicians. Is it going to be live musicians then?
Mm-hmm.
Live singing?
Well, right now I have a wonderful film score composer, Carlos Garza. And we have been collaborating for, it'll be almost 2 years this November. And we've created three songs which are exclusive recordings now, and they are available. We have a fundraising campaign on Indiegogo, and viewers or listeners can also see the YouTube, which we have. The YouTube is called Becoming Shakespeare, Young Will. And you can hear bits of two of our songs, Will's Awakening song, and also his wife Anne Hathaway's song called This Isn't Right, which she sings after her husband has been on the road for a year. And she is climbing the wall. She's frustrated. She's furious. She's lonely. She's sad. She has a roller coaster of emotions throughout this song. It's all three songs are wonderful. And going back to your question, Carlos has a sound studio, and he has a lot of instruments and computers, so he's able to generate the orchestra in his sound studio and different instruments. The orchestrations are absolutely extraordinary, and they can be heard, parts of them can be heard on the YouTube or on the Indiegogo fundraiser. And if you contribute $100 in our fundraiser, you can have access. We will give you all three exclusive recordings. But if you just want John's recording and Will's song, then that is, I think that's $50 for the two. $25 for one, 50 for two, and 100 for all three. And that also will include being listed as an executive producer of Becoming Shakespeare, Young Will.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So, so do you have a place, a playhouse that
theater.
You already are eyeing?
Well, I have been looking with a director, someone that I have known for a few years, Jesse Sean Atkinson, who I admire very much. He's a wonderful actor, director, choreographer, artistic director. He has his own company. And we've been talking about having a fundraising showcase. And we've looked at a couple of theaters. We have a couple of more that we're going to be looking at. And I also intend to have a conversation with him about doing it online. And there are several things we can do online. One is the showcase that he and I have already discussed, which includes not only the songs from Becoming Shakespeare, Young Will, but also scenes from, I have a one-woman show called Shakespeare's Love Child. And so also scenes from that, in which I, among other things, I demonstrate how, let's say, a more mature actress can still play Juliet from Romeo and Juliet, or how a young actress can play Petruchio from The Taming of the Shrew. And I share some of my Shakespearean experiences and also how I use Shakespeare in my voice and speech coaching. I also share that with the audience. And if you love Shakespeare, then you'll enjoy this. And there's audience participation as well. But then Jesse has a great show that he did called Love Shakespeare, where he combined scenes from Shakespeare with modern show songs. And so I wanted to do a couple of his scenes and songs as well for this. So that's in the making, and there are other things around this that I've been thinking about doing. One of my former students and clients wants me to do my one-woman show. She just moved into a new home, and she's asked, when she lived in a condo, now she wants me to do it in her home as a fundraiser. So we're going to be doing that as well. So there are several things in the offing. Yes.
And I have a lot of positive support to a project,
yes.
And you appear to have that support behind you, so that's really important.
Oh, yes, thank you. I do. I'm so fortunate. And I think that, to tell you the truth, I've had so many wonderful friendships come out of my public speaking courses where a student would become a client, and then we would become friends. And it's because opening yourself up, it's like they open themselves up to me. And I have such appreciation and love for their process of going through their fear of public speaking to the other side of it. Or maybe they have a huge project that they're preparing for, like a commencement address or a huge keynote speech at Stanford University or presenting a case before the California Supreme Court. These are all actually events that students were preparing for when they first took my course and started working with me. So it becomes so personal, like our respect and love of each other and appreciation. And I think that has everything to do with why we're still in each other's lives.
Yes, I also think that there's plenty of people, millions of people, who are fearful of standing on a stage and having people, looking at you from the audience and waiting for you to, just waiting for you to open your lips, and start speaking. And
exactly.
It can be very frightening, when you see all those eyes upon you. And so
exactly.
Getting a little bit off of Shakespeare here,
mm-hmm.
how does someone overcome looking directly at the audience, because that could be paralyzing?
Well, I certainly the approach that I take, Rose, in my workshops is that I have people from the very get-go start interacting with each other. I don't just stand up and lecture at people about public speaking. My approach is to have them start opening up and sharing their experiences with each other. And, for instance, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would they put themselves? If 10 is like extreme fear of public speaking, where are you? And start sharing about that with one of your classmates. So right away, they're starting to open up and share. And what that's doing immediately is starting to build trust, that they can trust themselves, that they can trust the other. They can trust life to be supportive. And this builds. My courses are 10 weeks long at UCLA Extension, not so long perhaps if I'm giving, maybe I'm giving a two-day workshop or a one-day workshop in a company. So that's a little different, but it still nevertheless sets the tone, and it positions them in that direction of looking for opportunities to just to share themselves. And then in my courses, I have them, of course they have assignments every week, but they practice their speeches with each other. So maybe there are 15 people in the course. They practice their speeches with everybody in the course during that 10-week course. And they give each other coaching and feedback before they ever get up in front of the room and then get my coaching and feedback. But also, I tell my students at the very beginning, you don't have to get up in front of the room until you choose to. And, you know, once, several years ago, I had a student who did not get up in front of the class until the sixth session. And then she had moved through her fear to such an extent that when she stood up to deliver the assigned speech in front of the whole group, and it was a big class, I had more than 20 people in that class. She had no fear because she had been given the space, the freedom, to move through her fear and get to the other side of it. So she had the trust and she had the confidence. And she was fantastic. Of course, she got a huge round of applause afterwards. And she never had an issue after that of being in front of the room. So that's my style. That's the style that I approach. It's very personal. It's very supportive and empowering, and it allows people to just bring out their best and really shine.
So if people want to sign up for your classes, how do they do that? Are you online with a website?
Thank you so much. I really love your questions. I am at UCLA Extension, and my course, Public Speaking for Professionals, begins Monday, September 26th, so it's just a little more than a month away, and it's from 6 to 9, and it's going to be on campus. So during the most critical part of COVID, of course, I was teaching online. I did three quarters on Zoom, and believe it or not, it really worked. It really worked well for students. But now we're back on campus, and so we start Monday the 26th from 6 to 9, and just go to the UCLA Extension website, and you can find my course, Public Speaking for Professionals, Pamela Kelly.
Oh, thank you for all that information. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So now,
you bet.
Back to Shakespeare. I think I read on one of your sites that he had 11 children. Is that correct?
What it was, he had three of his own children, but he supported when he was married, he and his wife, they had three children, like right off the bat. First, she was pregnant when they got married, and so their little girl was born 6 months into their marriage. And then she got pregnant again right away with twins. So they had three babies within a really short period of time, and they were living with his parents, and he had several siblings, I think three brothers and a sister. There were 11 people at all in the household. So there was a lot of people in his household, and his father was not very helpful in the glove-making business by that time. So it was pretty much up to Will. And then Will's brother, Gilbert, was just 2 years younger, so he would have been able to help too. But, I'm sure that house was bursting at the seams.
Yes, I kind of glanced over something about baby formula, and it just reminded me of what was happening today with the baby formula going south.
I remember. You were looking at. Yeah, I was. That's my Facebook webpage for Becoming Shakespeare Young Will. And so because I've just been immersed in this for so long now, things happen in our current events that will trigger me to think of something from Shakespeare's time. And so when we were having this shortage of baby formula in the States not too many weeks or months ago, it reminded me that Anne Hathaway Shakespeare, Will's wife, was remembered when she died. Her daughter Suzanne remembered and acknowledged her for breastfeeding her children, that she breastfed them for quite a long time, indicating that perhaps the family did not have a lot of money. Will was working in the glove-making business, and then I have him actually on the road as a player, as a young man, before he goes to London. And so he was making just enough money for them to survive on, but not a lot. And Anne Hathaway did really nurse her children until they were older. I don't know how much older, but the two daughters lived to be quite a bit older than Will and his siblings did. So his children lived longer. His son died at the age of 11, but his two girls lived longer than he and his siblings did. And so that perhaps has something to do with the fact that the girls were breastfed until they were older. Maybe until they were even five or six.
That caught my attention because of the baby formula plus shortage. Plus also my friend who's a nurse, when she had her children, she breastfed them until they were like five or six, which I found really strange. But being a nurse, she said that was the best nourishment for little children.
Mm-hmm.
And she breastfed her children until they were five or six, so that really caught my attention.
Yes,
I never thought about it, I never thought about it in the terms that when you're very poor, that, yes, that's probably some women found themselves in that position where they didn't have a choice because their children were undernourished.
Yes, exactly. And also maybe for Anne, because I think of her as being a very physical and tempestuous person, very impetuous. I think because her husband, after this initial getting married and having the twins, I don't think they had a close physical relationship. And so being able to nurse her children would have been able to give her some physical, you know, comfort for a few more years that she wouldn't have had from him. And that's me. That's not known. It's not like she wrote a personal journal that we have today. You know? She wouldn't have been able to write, first of all.
But it does make you stop and think about back then, you know, when we're so we're so used to having things. So when they said, you know, there's no baby formula, it's going down south, being shipped down south, it was like, we're in America. There's no baby formula.
Yeah. Right.
And so it was really a shocking thing to hear that babies in this country could be undernourished without baby formula if mothers didn't breastfeed. And so it was more than just an issue. It was an injustice to the mothers and the babies. And so it did bother me a lot that that could possibly happen in the United States of America. And it should never have happened and should not happen in the future. So, but it also makes us understand that, you know, back in the times of Shakespeare, they didn't have baby formula. They didn't have stores all over every corner. So they had to be physically able to feed their children or go out in the fields and plant something or figure out what they could eat. And so it does open your eyes, and I think I'm really glad that you're doing this play because it does bring out a lot of issues that I hope people think about, that how fortunate we've been compared to people back in those days.
Right, right. Well, you bring a depth of understanding when you read these things. It just brings up so much depth of knowledge and experience that you have. So thank you so much for your questions and for allowing me to share about my passion. And now I'm doing fundraising, and I've been actually video recording myself talking about the lyrics and the story behind the lyrics for our three recorded songs. And that's been interesting. And next we'll be recording my interview with my composer, Carlos Garza, and that is for Behind the Music. So that's going to be interesting. And then I'll be focusing on the fundraising showcases that I shared with you about. So there's never a dull moment.
Pamela, before we close our interview, it's been very interesting, actually, and intriguing. And I'm sure it's opened a lot of people's minds to Shakespeare and learning more about Shakespeare in your play. There was one piece I read that said that he left his second best bed to his wife?
Right, yes. When Will retired, I don't recall. He was in his late 40s, perhaps. He only was retired and living in Stratford for a short time, maybe just a couple of years. And his friend and colleague Ben Johnson visited him, and they went to the local tavern and set up talking and drinking, and Will became very ill. He was only 52, and he became so ill that he had to write his will right away. And it was an afterthought that he hadn't left anything to his wife. And as an afterthought, he was told, you've got to leave her something. And he left her his second best bed. His handwriting was very shaky, and he could barely write, but he left her his second best bed. And there have been many books written about that. And some people think that they had this beautiful, wonderful, romantic relationship, and other people think they had the opposite. I'm more of the second opinion that all those children were born right at the beginning. It's like, okay, so next. He was open to following his bliss. And Ben Johnson had said in a eulogy that Shakespeare was not of this age alone, but for all ages. And in my research, I do believe that the keys to his being able to develop his genius was that he did make a choice to have it all and to burn the candle at both ends. that he burned the candle at both ends so that he could follow his bliss. He could save his family and make sure that they had food on the table. But he also chose to burn the candle at both ends and follow his bliss, as Joseph Campbell had said, and to be his best self, to follow his star. And I think that we don't have to be geniuses like Will Shakespeare, but we can follow that as well by following our stars, by following our bliss, and by making sure that the people around us have what they need to have to survive, that it will bring out our own personal genius, our own personal best. And so yeah. That's kind of what I've gotten from all of this so far.
Well, that's very, very intriguing and interesting, and brought out some totally unexpected information on young Will and his family. And so now is your time to shine, and you can let our audience know how to contact you so they can donate to your website for your play.
Oh, thank you, Rose. Yes, and thank you for listening, everyone. So you can find the website for my project at https://youngwill.info. That's https://youngwill.info. And then you can just read through that or scroll through that till you come to the executive producer page, and there's a link to my Indiegogo fundraising campaign. And that link will take you to my video. I hope you enjoy it. You'll get to hear some of two of our three exclusive recordings, which I think are just glorious. And also, if you want to go directly to the YouTube video, it is Becoming Shakespeare Young Will YouTube. And then if you're interested in finding out more about me and my public speaking, you can go to www.pkellycom.com to learn more about my course. And if you're interested in registering, it would be on the UCLA Extension website, and it's called Public Speaking for Professionals. Thank you so much, everyone, and thank you so much, Rose. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much, and we look forward to your play and hope it will be totally successful, and I can't wait to hear the music. So, again,
thank you so much,
Pamela.
You're welcome.
All righty, we'll talk to you later.
Okay, great. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And Pamela Kelly has left the building, and we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts, and her play sounds really exciting, and I can't wait to see it. And also, don't forget to sign up for her courses if you would like to be one of those dynamic public speakers. And if you want to read, and I'm sure you do, want to read about humanity and will humanity survive everything that's coming against us and the pandemics and the planned pandemics and the post-pandemics and the pre-pandemics, and I think everybody's pandemicked out. But anyway, it is a serious issue and a serious problem that needs to be addressed in a fun, humorous adventure story. Fictional, and one critic said, well-crafted, scathing political satire that is humorous and will make people be concerned about humanity and about free will.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
The Justice Club is back on Colombo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Colombo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 12 to 1 p.m. on the West Coast and 3 to 4 on the East Coast and around the world on the World Wide Web. So don't forget to bookmark, like, follow, share, and get the information you're not going to get anywhere else. So the Daily Signal says, rise and fall of Fauci illustrates death of expertise right here on the Justice Club. And Jarrett Stepman is the author and says, of all the institutions that have become radicalized in the last couple of years, the realm of medicine is perhaps the most disturbing. What will our society look like when you can't trust the Centers for Disease Control, CDC, and prevention, or even your doctor? These are the questions that are on everybody's minds today. It's funny that he wrote this because I've been asking those same questions. Do you trust the medical profession any longer? Do you trust the big pharma manufacturers? Do you trust the CDC, the World Health Organization, Dr. Fauci? Who do you trust any longer? Do you trust your government? Well, the answers have to come from your own homework and your own research and making your own discerned decisions and watching the actions of what is happening around you and reading books like Obamasaurus, which is available on Amazon.com in Kindle and paperback, and I strongly urge you to read it because it will awaken your senses to what is actually happening to humanity and to the world, and not for humanity and for the world, which is the way it's supposed to be. So Dr. Anthony Fauci announced Monday that he will step down in December from his position at the National Institute of Health, NIH, ending a 10-year in public health policy that stretches back to the late 1960s. I have a cup of coffee here. Good to have a cup of coffee handy. Or a glass of water, right? I prefer the coffee in the morning. It's a noticeable moment. Fauci's long-term obscurity, followed by short-lived media-driven stardom, and then intense polarization, is illustrative of larger trends in American society. It goes on to say, excuse me, the walls, oh my goodness, let me take a break. I will be right back in just a moment. Don't touch that dial.
The Justice Club is back on Colombo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Colombo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
That's right. Let's find out what little justice we have in the world today. And, you know, Dr. Fauci resigned right before the election. So it did make me wonder if Dr. Fauci is concerned about the election and about maybe a red wave coming, because the Republicans, the GOP, threatened that if Dr. Fauci doesn't resign, or even if he does resign, that if they take control of the House and the Senate, they are not going to let go of an investigation into the gain-of-function biochemical weapon that was developed at MIT and then transferred over to communist China's careless Wuhan Biochemical Lab. And since that time, I've done some research, and I found that there are several countries that actually have biochemical labs that can create and develop biochemical weapons. That is very dangerous. It may be more dangerous than a nuke. A nuke wipes out everybody. But could a biochemical weapon wipe out everybody? Or do they have to keep unleashing pandemics in order to wipe out 90% of the population? That is a question many people are asking. In fact, Taiwan, I was surprised, has 10 biochemical laboratories in Taiwan. And Speaker Pelosi just flew over to Taiwan. I mean, why would she visit Taiwan? To get a medal? And has invested in lithium batteries, and they're invested in electric cars, and they're invested, according to the news, in computer chips. And everybody thinks that China has the hold on the world's distribution of computer chips. But the truth is that it's Taiwan who has the worldwide distribution of computer chips, which then caused me to wonder if China wants to control Taiwan because they want to control the world's distribution of computer chips. Now, I also read that China was ramping up its military, but then has been stifled by economic issues. Businesses closing because they're having problems with electricity and electrical supply. Now, in 2020 and 2021, they withheld the computer chips from China to the automobile industry. And those are gas, those are cars that take gasoline, which was very interesting to me that President Biden would then shut down the oil drilling in America. And at the same time, when they're invested in Bill Gates and George Soros and the technocrats in electric cars, and they want to rid the world of vehicles that take gasoline. But at the same time, they get on Air Force One, Air Force Two, and they take their families on vacations. Back a few years ago, when Obama was president, the news reported that it took $86,000 to start up a Air Force One and Air Force Two. $86,000 one way of taxpayer money. And then they're polluting the skies. And then recently they come back and they say, we're raising your taxes because of climate change. And who owns the multi-billion dollar yachts? Russians and American wealthy billionaires and multimillionaires. So who's polluting the environment? It's not the natural-born and naturalized Americans who are being persecuted and punished for polluting the air. Every day, they've been spraying chemtrails for decades. According to the chemists, the chemtrails contain lead, barium, and aluminum. What goes up must come down. And when it comes down, it's been coming down on our trees, our plants, our crops, our oceans, our rivers, our lakes, our soil, and on us, human beings. And this has been going on for decades. And then you go to the airport, which was implemented under the Obama regime, and they wanted people to be fully naked x-rayed We didn't even know how high the levels of radiation were placed. And I read a few years ago that at one airport, when they went to inspect the levels of radiation, which doctors will tell you there are no safe levels, and so will medical journals, if you read those journals and you do your research and your homework, that no levels of radiation are safe for human beings or animals or plants or crops or the ocean. Because radiation can be a killer, whether it's immediate or over time. Radiation can cause cataracts. It can stunt a child's growth, a little child's growth. It can cause aging. It sets off the free radicals to gobble up your good cells, and it's irreversible. And it can cause cancer and death. So why did they want Americans, who are law-abiding citizens without probable cause of ever being a terrorist or a criminal boarding a plane, to be radiated at unknown levels every time they go to the airport, full body naked x-rayed? We don't know what happens to those films. And even possibly taking a hair strand or DNA swab on your hand, or subjected to intrusive pat-downs, even though I don't think they are licensed sheriffs or police officers who went through the academies and passed all the tests and were granted a license to be a police officer or a law enforcer, a sheriff. But anyway, they pat you down anyway intrusively if you get patted down. And the interesting thing is that according to this report I read a few years back, when they inspected this one airport and their radiation level, it was 10% higher than what they had set. So all those people that got radiated is over 10% higher than what they set as whatever they set as normal. Don't even know they got radiated at a 10% higher rate of radiation. And we don't even know how many people or who they were. And they don't provide any coverage for your eyes, to protect your eyes or your body parts, like they do in the dental office and the doctor's offices, after you sign a consent form to be radiated. And they walk out of the room before they push the button. So those are just things that I find to be injustices against the American people, and that the American people need to do their own personal homework and research and think about how healthy are these agendas that were forced upon the American people and then the world in 2009 to the human body, and then catapulting it to being human lab rats for a human experiment worldwide with unknown consequences, using a secret trade secret formula, people not knowing what's injected into their bodies, and then an mRNA gene therapy, which Gates and Zuckerberg recently admitted alter your DNA with unknown consequences to the human body. So those are food for thought. Do your homework. Do your research. Don't believe anything I say, because nothing said on Colombo Chronicles, the Justice Club, is intended to be legal, medical, political, or financial advice, but a dissemination of information for educational and entertainment purposes only. God bless you, and God bless America, and God bless the world.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Well, my friends, time flies. And now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Colombo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Colombo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.